I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Bernie DeSantis. He is the CEO of Insignia Training Partners. Bernie has over 20 years of corporate learning and development. He helps organizations and experts deliver high-impact training without the stress. His team specializes in instruction, design, facilitation, coaching, and virtual event planning, supporting everything from one-off workshops to large-scale learning rollouts.
Yes, sir.
Bernie,
thanks for having me, Craig.
Yeah. Well, first off, I feel like we got to talk about how we met. We're both in Success Champions Networking. We both are chapter presidents.
That's right.
And how long have you been in SCN?
About 2.5 years now. I think it was June-ish of 2024. I originally met Mr. Donnie Bovine and flipped me on my head around networking and, you know, the right way to do it and such. It was interesting. First conversation, he said, "You know, I think you should start a chapter." I think he says that to a lot of people now in hindsight, but it was definitely, I felt like it was a good opportunity to learn how to network properly, but also build a group around me of similar types of people, right? As a small business owner, you don't get the water cooler talk with your peers often.
Yeah.
It was a great opportunity to bring a group together for that purpose.
Yeah. And for me, one of the moments, so I told Donnie no 4 times. Actually, I told Jessica no once or twice, someone else no once, and Donnie no once. And then, but one of the things that hit me was, oh, I get to build a chapter that has the people I want to hang out with anyway. And I'd been leaving a group where I felt like I was pulling up the average. I'm like, I need to be in a group where I'm pulling down the average.
Right. Absolutely. You want to keep people in the room that are going to help to elevate you, bring you up a little bit more. I think that that's the interesting part about SCN. And I don't know what your approach is for your group specifically, but, you know, we definitely want to a certain caliber in the room. But on the same token, we want to bring some people along that we can help to grow and that are going to help grow us. You know, one of the qualifiers for our group is that they should have as a number about 1,000 connections on LinkedIn, right? So that they have a network to introduce from. And we brought some folks on that had really small networks on LinkedIn, and they have turned out to be absolute powerhouse networkers. So it's been really cool to see the journey from, you know, having some really quality people in the room, experienced people, really specialized people in the room, to some really new folks. So I think that we forget as we get further down the line in business what it's like to be that new person. And it's good to have that reminder too.
Yeah. Well, and for those that are listening on audio, is something you're missing. When I first met you, I was like, holy cow, it's a big mustache. I mean, that's big.
It's usually the conversation starter, Craig. Let's be honest.
So what's the deal with the mustache?
I mean, honestly, it was completely unintentional brand. Gosh, it's been at least a decade now. My cousin and I were sitting in his basement one day having a couple of bourbons. And, you know, after the first glass, he said, "You know, I think you should grow out your mustache." I had grown it out in my 20s once before. Took it off because of, you know, all of the reasons. Stuff gets stuck in it. You know, you end up eating it overnight and ends up in your nose, all the things, the maintenance. So after about the third bourbon that night, he suggested it again. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And so I started to grow it out. About 6 years ago, my grandfather passed away. He also had an epic mustache. You know, almost want to think like 80s porn star. Like, yeah. you know it, right? He passed away, cancer. And my family asked me to give his eulogy. So I agreed. Obviously, I was honored to do so. I went up to the front of the room, stood at the podium. It's about halfway through, and I saw a few people walk into the back of the room that I didn't know. You know, somebody gets them in their 70s, their 80s, you're like, the circle gets pretty small. You know who's going to be there. So I finished up and I went to the back of the room and I introduced myself to them and I asked, how they knew my grandfather. And they shared with me that they had worked with him 40 years prior at the Better Made Potato Chip Factory here in Detroit. He was their boss. And when they found out he had passed, they wanted to come and pay their respects to the best boss that they ever had, their words, and they wanted to see his big, beautiful mustache one more time. And from that moment on, I was like, well, I am not ever taking this thing off. And from then on, it's kind of become my brand. Like everybody knows me as Mr. Mustache. It's usually the conversation starter. And it's been really interesting, but it was never intentional. My grandfather was my hero. He literally came to every single baseball game I ever played, even beer league softball. Well,
Yeah.
after college, he would show up and just watch me play. I love that guy. So yeah, it's kind of an ode to him.
That's cool. And it's funny, I have the negative space in mustache, and I had never had a goatee until, as a result of my time in the hospital, they goobered up my mouth. And when I came out, I had plastic surgery done about a year later. And I realized I would never again be able to grow a proper mustache. And I moped around for like 3 weeks. And I was like, quit moping around, turn it into something. And so I grew a goatee, got new portraits made. And so your part of your brand is this big, bushy mustache. Part of mine is, hey, there's a big chunk of hair missing across the side.
Yeah, you just got to embrace it though. That's the thing. Like there are a lot of guys. It's super funny, Craig. There are a lot of guys out there that compliment me on the mustache and they're like, I just can't grow it. I'm like, no, you could grow it. You have to put the time in, you have to put the effort in, you have to get through the uncomfortable phase and just own it. Whatever it ends up being, you just have to own it.
Yeah, and see, I don't get compliments. Everybody's looking at it, they don't want to ask. And if I bring it up, they're like, oh, I never noticed. I'm like, you lying.
Shut up.
Yeah, no, I don't get compliments. Hey, that's a really cool bald spot across your lip.
It does stand out. Like you should talk about it more, honestly, Craig, because it does stand out. It is a different look than most people have with facial hair,
Yeah.
frankly.
Well, so I did a 10-minute teach in my chapter today on the importance of exposing a weakness, vulnerability, or flaw and how it improves trust and authority.
Absolutely.
So that's now in the slide deck, including a AI-generated picture of me as a pirate with,
Nice.
yeah.
Make sure you send that to Camille. She will really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, I do. I need to. Thanks for the reminder. Yeah, I'll shoot that over to it. She'll
Yeah,
love it.
for sure. She will definitely appreciate that.
Well, hey, let's talk about what you do. So you do online training, corporate training. I don't know. Lay it out. What do you
Yeah,
do?
glad to share. So, kind of the story. I bought this company 4 years ago, January 1st, 2022, after working within the business for about 5 years. Insignia Training Partners, founded in 2007. We were a staff augmentation company up until COVID hit. So we were sending out facilitators, coaches, instructional designers to help larger organizations build out their training programs, whatever that might look like. Sometimes it was in person, sometimes it was virtual, a lot of e-learning. Well, once COVID hit, no more in-person training was happening. Everybody had to switch to virtual. And because of our prior relationships, we were already working with organizations like Johnson and Johnson and EY, some big companies. And so they came to us and asked if we could help them with their virtual delivery because they were switching from almost 100% in-person in some cases to now 100% virtual. And so they struggled with it. And we were really fortunate to be working with them at the time. Peak COVID, I had 50 virtual producers supporting training programs internally at those organizations. COVID ended and some of the volume went down a little bit, but I recognized it was a huge opportunity because COVID made this space mainstream. Everybody's familiar with doing virtual now, or they think they are.
Yeah.
It's become accepted, right? You can quite literally become a global organization overnight through Zoom. So I started to look at what we were doing, for those learning events with J&J and EY and some of these bigger organizations. And then I looked at my network and LinkedIn and I saw all of these people doing master classes and webinars and workshops and roundtables and whatever you're going to call them. I started going to some of them. I was like, holy shit, these are dumpster fires. Respectfully, like, I'm glad you're trying. You are a subject matter expert, really good content in a lot of cases. They just didn't understand what they were doing in this space. So we started to support kind of business development type events as opposed to pure learning internal, audiences. Now we are talking about public audiences, right? People signing up for these master classes and workshops, giving them a great engaging experience so that the people who are delivering it, oftentimes that coach, that consultant, they're able to have a conversation after the event, right? It leads to a stronger brand. It leads to familiarity. It's almost like sampling at a bakery, right? Like you walk into the bakery, you have a cookie because it's there and it's amazing. And then you try it and you're like, next thing you know, you're walking out with 12 cookies. It's the same type of thing when you're talking about a virtual event online. People are coming to experience you, to learn something from you. You build a little bit of trust, and now you have an opportunity where, if it makes sense, maybe they're going to buy your services. But if you give them a really terrible experience, right, if that cookie's not good, then they're probably not going to buy the thing from you, whatever it might be. And it's the same thing when you're talking about learning, right? You have to keep people engaged in what they're learning.
And I imagine not quite the same, but this might be an analogy. I ran a stop sign one day, and I had choice to pay the ticket and get points, or go to a defensive driving course. And they have one. I went, I showed up, and I thought, okay, this is going to be boring. This is like, detention back in, high school. I'm showing up Saturday morning for detention. And a couple things that really stood out to me. One, it was fun and they were hilarious. Two, it was really valuable. I learned some things that day. And three, I got a hamburger as a part of my fees. It was decent. It was a real good hamburger. It was at Texas Land and Cattle, which is a steakhouse here in Austin. And I think it was that. But yeah, I mean, I look back at that experience and I was like, these guys just completely nailed it. They took what would normally be painful, and I would imagine for employees, oh, geez, I got to do that training again. And to have it turn around and say, not only was it fun, but I learned something.
That's exactly it. And I think unfortunately a lot of people, when they think of virtual, it is a secondary thought still to them. They don't really think of it as truly the stage that it can be. And understanding that you can create a very impactful experience here if you understand the landscape, if you understand the communication, if you understand the tools. Honestly, one of the biggest things that I have to coach a lot of my clients on is just how they show up on camera. Where do they put the camera? Where does the microphone go? Where is the lighting? That part gets overlooked or underemphasized, I think oftentimes. They think if they just turn on the camera, they're good. Well, that's not the case.
Yeah, no, and that's, when COVID first hit, I immediately started doing, this is back when challenges were the big thing, a little 5-day challenge.
Oh yeah,
Funny how
still doing
those
them.
things come. Are they still?
Oh yeah, I got one planned for next week. In fact, we're still doing them. Yeah,
Well, that's
absolutely.
awesome. Well, I had like a 5-day trust accelerator or a 3-day trust accelerator challenge. And it was like, okay, now you have to be able to sell on Zoom. And most of y'all have never done that. And so it was, but we had a shopping list, as part of the challenge. We were like, okay, here's the link in Amazon where you need buy this, this, and this. And we dealt with the things like lighting and what have you. And it's, I mean, there's just small tweaks. I have a co-working space that I work from sometimes, and I take lights, studio lights there that, just the small 4x6 panels, and the lights kept reflecting off my glasses. But just get them up, like I have lights on me right now, and just get them up a little bit higher and you lose the reflection. Just small little things make a huge difference.
Absolutely. And honestly, a lot of it is not that they don't care. It's unconscious incompetence, right? They don't even know that they should be paying attention to those things or that it matters, right? Like putting your lights at a 45 degree angle, right? If you have them on the side of you or having them slightly raised at an angle, it eliminates that. But if it's not something that you're consciously looking for, you don't really even think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize you could do 45 on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's a nugget. That's one of my takeaways from this.
Yeah.
And you know what? Just quick side note. People ask me why I do podcasting. I'm like, oh, you're kidding. I get to talk to people who are experts in other fields. And I learn things that I'd never learn otherwise.
It's the same reason I love doing virtual events, because every time I work with someone who's a subject matter expert in a thing, I help them to build out their program, their content. We figure out who their ICP is. We talk about their marketing, their messaging, delivering the content in the event. How do we make it engaging? The polling questions, the chat, all of the things. I get a masterclass in what they do every single time I take on a new client or help build an event. It is so much fun.
Yeah. So how do you connect with people? You know, so if I'm standing behind a camera and I have people out there in the ether, how do I make connection with those people? How do I make them feel like they're in the room with me?
You know, we talked a little bit about it already, and which is the virtual presence and thinking about the technology that you're using, right? Having a decent camera, showing up well. Definitely want to prioritize your audio. If your audio sounds like crap, people will not connect with you. They will tune out inevitably. But a lot of it is in how you use the tool. Oftentimes, well, this day and age, most people have a very short attention span, right? TikTok and whatnot has kind of ruined us. So when we show up to a live virtual event here, it's oftentimes just about timing in our delivery. When do you leverage a polling question, right? Get people to come back to the platform, click on the button, tune into what you're saying for a second. Drop a chat prompt every 3 to 5 minutes. Have them respond to something. Maybe it's a one or a two from a multiple choice type question. Simple things like that. It's not rocket science, but keeping people engaged roughly every 5 to 10 minutes, that's really what connects people. It is bringing them back and engaging them, not only auditorily, not only visually, but kinesthetically as well. That's how people learn. And if you apply those same type of principles here in virtual, it's, again, it's not rocket science. It's actually very simple. Not always easy, but it's very simple.
Well, and something you do in your chapter that I haven't copied in my chapter, but I've copied in our virtual happy hours, is you did a little poll, a truth from fiction poll at the end.
Yep. Fact or crap.
Yeah. And I copied that. I need to get into our meetings, but when we do a virtual happy hour, we have a truth from fiction quiz. So we did a Valentine's themed happy hour and three stories about extraordinary things that happened on Valentine's Day. Two are false, one's true.
Yeah.
People love those.
Yep. Absolutely love them in my chapter. Like, people literally stay on and wait till the end, even if they have other things to do. Sometimes, like, I got to stay here for the for the fact or crap. I got to see if I can get it. It's great.
Well, and let me just throw this out. You know, for those listening, I let ChatGPT make my quizzes. I don't go off and do the research, and I just tell ChatGPT what I'm trying to do, and it comes back and it gives me the quizzes, and they're amazing.
Same. Absolutely. It's a really simple and easy way to engage with your audience, and you don't have to do a whole lot of thinking. If you already have content, you plug it right into ChatGPT and say, give me 5 polling questions around this, and it will spit them right out for you. Plug and play. Super easy. Yeah.
So what are some, when people are doing these things, what are some things they typically get wrong?
You know, I think a lot of people tend to overshare. They try to bring too much value, and they end up just spitting through a fire hose, and it's too much. You have to stick to just a couple of ideas. 40 minutes is not a lot of time. And if you're trying to get through 5-7 different objectives, you're probably not going to land any of them. So you really want to keep your message very succinct. What am I going to talk about? 2 to 3 points at the most. And then you should have some type of a call to action at the end. If people don't know what they should do next, if you don't tell them, they're not going to take the next step. So keep it very succinct, very direct, and have a call to action, a clear call to action at the end. Whether it's to sell something, schedule an appointment, whatever that is, have a next step. Because if you don't tell people what the next step is, they won't take one.
Yeah. Yeah. What's another common mistake that people make?
I think another common mistake people make is that they can take in-person content, just turn on the camera and talk at it, and that is going to bring value to people. Again, this is a different stage, and you have to understand how to use it. So if you think that you are just going to talk at the camera and talk at your audience for 45 minutes to an hour, and it's going to give you the result that you want, you're probably fooling yourself. The sage on the stage thing is, you know, pretty much dead, except for college campuses at this point. People crave engagement. They want you to be intentional about how you are talking to them and about how you are teaching them. They don't want to just be talked at anymore.
You know, I know somebody launched a podcast and my wife was telling me about it. And I said, oh, who's he bringing on as guests? And she said, nobody. He's just talking. I'm like, ooh, we'll see how that goes. I haven't heard much about the podcast lately.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it can be such an echo chamber trying to do it on your own. Like you have to have some other thoughts.
Yeah. And there are people, I mean, certainly on YouTube now, you're introducing another medium when you're on YouTube or another dimension. But, you know, I see people doing it, but the people who do it well are few. And there's one YouTuber that I particularly like. He still has guests on. Actually, as I think through it, a lot of the YouTubers, and I mean, number one podcast is Joe Rogan. Has guests.
Yep.
Talks to them for 3 hours. That's my counterpoint to the whole attention span. I was like, I don't know. Maybe there's something else going on.
There are certain people that absolutely can capture an audience for a long period of time, but you're right. It's very few and far between that do it very well. You know, somebody that comes to mind for me is somebody like Tony Robbins. Like he runs multi-day, full day, high energy type events. Like people will absolutely tune into him all day long. But that is not something, a skill everybody has.
No. Well, as I'm trying to think through YouTubers I know that can do where they are the show and they can consistently run bits that are 20 minutes or more, I can think of one, at least one in my sphere. And that's a guy named Michael Francis. He used to be a capo in the Colombo crime family.
Oh.
He was there when Joe Colombo got shot.
Yeah.
Okay, the dude's just phenomenally interesting. Yeah.
Got some stories to tell.
Yeah. And he's good. But when I think about the other ones, it's that interaction. You know, just, you know, I think the point you were making is if you're going to just look at a camera and start talking, you better be careful. How long? Now, sometimes that is appropriate. How do you have any guidelines for how long somebody should talk or how to make sure that works out?
Yeah, I mean, I would say you definitely don't want a monologue for more than 10 minutes if you have a live audience with you, right? If you're there in a virtual, you don't want to go more than 10 minutes where you're just straight talking at them and you don't have something to interrupt the pattern. Because there's just, let's be honest, Craig, there's too many distractions here in a home environment. Very few people work from just one monitor anymore. It's so easy for me to be in my email and in your Zoom at the same time.
Yeah.
So you've just, again, you got to keep people engaged throughout the course. So if you're talking for more than 10 minutes at a time, people start to check out pretty quickly.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, COVID flipped the switch. It created this world. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes.
I agree. I honestly, there's not a CFO out there that will argue the cost effectiveness of delivering training virtually as opposed to bringing people to a single location, travel costs, and all of the things. I believe that as we continue to become a more and more remote society, you're going to see more and more virtual type of experiences and meetings and training programs because it's just more effective. It's more cost efficient. You will never beat an in-person experience. They're always going to be better and more impactful. But you can't do it all the time. And this makes it more scalable. This makes you able to be a global delivery as opposed to a local geography.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, let's wrap up with this. Because I agree with you. I agree with you. But there's a question in my head. What about AI or VR or AR? You know, like the, you know, the Meta glasses, if they're still selling those. And
oh yeah,
I think I would start with, people have been trying some version of that going all the way back to Google Glasses, you know, 10 years ago.
Yep.
And for some reason, they don't hit. They don't work. I don't understand it. But do you see the day coming where maybe training or some type of virtual conference begins with putting on AR?
I'll be honest with you. That day, that time is now. It is absolutely happening. There are a lot of organizations in the L&D space that only leverage AR and VR training programs. They are especially effective when you are talking about what I refer to as blood on the ground scenarios, right? Where it's high stakes, high risk, there is risk of people being injured. That virtual space allows you to simulate the same environment without the actual risk. So I see it being highly effective in certain use cases. Oftentimes, the biggest challenge is just the cost barrier to entry, right? You got to buy 100,000 of these things for your workforce. Well, once you start buying these things en masse, they become really expensive. You can invest millions and millions of dollars in just this hardware. So it's hard to do at scale, right? But for specialized use cases, absolutely. It's here. It's now. People are doing it. It's really immersive, really, really cool stuff. But for general population, it really hasn't picked on. It hasn't caught on because it is a higher cost to entry.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, Bernie, this has been really good. I always enjoy hanging out with you. I always learn something when I hang out with you. How can folks reach you?
Best way to reach me, honestly, is on LinkedIn. My DMs are always open. Connect with me there, or you can find us at insigniatraining.com.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate you having me, brother.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.